The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Through the first 4 months of the 49ers offseason, it looked like a coin flip, even a three-headed coin. Which quarterback would be on the field when the regular season opens? Now, based on everything coming out of team headquarters in Santa Clara, a true favorite has emerged to start week one at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it's the player who has yet to be fully cleared. Brock Purdy started throwing a regulation football last week, and that is seen as nothing but a positive sign for the quarterback whom general manager John Lynch has repeatedly described as the leader in the clubhouse. As the 49ers enter their third week and final week of on-field practices, Jennifer Lee Chan and I discuss who have been the most impressive players on the field during those workouts. Also, 49ers assistant coach Leonard Hankerson shares insights into his group of wide receivers and talks about what it's like to play for Kyle Shanahan and what it's like to be a coach on his staff. All that and so much more on this episode of 49ers Talk, coming at you right now.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Maiocco.
This is 49ers Talk, brought to you by Big O Tires, Matt Maiocco, Jennifer Lee Chan. And Jennifer, as anticipated, the 49ers cutting short their offseason program. So that means sooner vacation for us, which is never a bad thing. The yearly questions that we get, what do you guys do in the offseason? Our answer, there is no offseason. Finally, though, it looks like there will be an off season for us coming a week earlier.
Yeah, but it's not really an off season. It's just a 4 to 6 week break, but we're still
like a pause, isn't it? It's like when you press that pause button.
Yeah, I think that's it. But I mean, there's always news that comes out from, you know, different angles, from, you know, social media. Guys will be on, I'm sure, on different shows. We'll keep you updated of anything that happens amongst the 49ers players or coaches, anything like that. So yeah, it's a little bit of a lighter time of the year, maybe.
Yeah. And so they canceled the last week of OTAs and then replaced that with the quote unquote mandatory mini camp. And so those practices will be Tuesday and Wednesday. But speaking of social media, you know who I wish were more active on social media? Brock Purdy. I want to see Brock Purdy throwing a football, and we haven't seen that yet, even though he is, in fact, throwing a football, not throwing like a deflated football like Tom Brady. It is like the full-on Wilson, the Duke, it's a football, and NFL football ranges from like 14, 15 ounces. He's throwing it. You know, we heard Kyle Shanahan told us earlier that he was throwing basically a towel, not throwing the towel in on the season. He fully expects to be ready for this season, but he's throwing a football right now. That, to me, is very significant. And what's even more significant is just the tone of voice. When Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch talk about Brock Purdy, it used to be kind of like, well, we'll see, you know, we don't know. Now it's becoming more and more optimistic about his readiness or his anticipated readiness for the regular season just over the past 2 or 3 weeks.
I think him throwing an actual football was the big step. I mean, all the doctors talked about it. Brock Purdy talked about it. Kyle Shanahan spoke about it. That's the kind of marker. Brandon Ayuk spoke to us this week and said, yeah, he saw Brock throwing it, moving around a little bit. So I think that's, you know, it helps, I guess, really solidify that trend in the right direction of him being ready for week one. And the fact that he's able to throw with an actual football is a huge step. And there's, you know, we haven't heard anything other than positive things coming out of Santa Clara, which means no setbacks, in air quotes. So yeah, all a good thing.
And you know what, Jennifer, I've been very consistent through the years. I've often remarked how important it is for an NFL quarterback to be actually be able to throw an NFL football.
Really?
See, yeah, no, it's kind of like I almost wanted to copyright that, like, you know, the emotional property, not the emotion. What is it called? The intellectual property. Yeah. putting my stamp on that, like, okay, that's kind of an important thing. I do want to talk to you about who's kind of stood out to you in the first couple of weeks of the OTA practices, but I will say this. I think I've been impressed by all three of the quarterbacks who are out there. You know, mm-hmm. I really came in not knowing much about Brandon Allen, but he looks like, you know, he's throwing the ball pretty well. He doesn't get as many reps as Sam Darnold and Trey Lance, but, you know, you can see, and I know he's a coach's son, all that stuff. You know, he's a student of the game. He's been an NFL number two quarterback for the past three seasons. I think he looks pretty good. He kind of almost reminds me of Brock Purdy from a year ago, like kind of an under the radar guy where you're like, oh, you know, he's not bad. And he's pretty good. Turned out Brock Purdy was more than just not bad. But also I think Trey Lance is throwing the ball very well. And the way I measure that is it just looks like he's getting rid of the ball quicker. And also that spiral is tighter. And then, yeah. You know, Sam Darnold is advertised. Sam Darnold is no one can ever, you know, a lot of holes to poke in Sam Darnold's career, first five seasons in the NFL, but you can't, no one in the right mind could say, oh, he just doesn't have an NFL arm. He's not capable of making the throws. No, he's fully capable, but I throw bouquets and roses at those three guys for one reason. And the reason that I set that up, there's always but, right? There's always
what's coming. It's coming.
Yeah. Here's the but. It might not matter how good those guys are. If Brock Purdy is ready, if he's cleared, if he's able to, you know, get on the field, stay on the field, because as I've stated, if I were a betting man, Brock Purdy to me right now looks like he's getting to the point where the 49ers fully expect him to be ready for the start of the regular season. And I think if he's fully ready for the start of the regular season, he's going to be the team starting quarterback.
That's been the theme from everybody at, you know, in the 49ers organization since the end of the 2022 season, that Brock Purdy is the leader in the clubhouse. He's going to be the starter once he's healthy. I guess really it was if he's healthy enough and if he comes back as strong as he was before, that's who they have set as the leader of the offense. And it looks like all signs are pointing to that being a true statement. And we'll see what happens with the other three quarterbacks. They all, like you said, have been very efficient. I think the fun part of OTA so far is what's happening after the quarterbacks throw the ball, which is the battle between all the defensive backs and the wide receivers, because offensive line and defensive line, they're kind of going through the motions, but they're not really doing anything yet because the guys aren't wearing pads. They're running around in t-shirts and shorts. Most of the time helmets, sometimes not helmets, which gives me a little anxiety. I know we've talked about this before. When they don't have helmets on the field, it just makes me feel weird. And I'm not even a mother.
Especially when Christian McCaffrey is running 100 miles an hour through the hole without a helmet on.
Anyways, I digress. But the competition between the defensive backs and the receivers have been really something fun to watch. And I was at the Eric Armstead Gala, the 2023 Kickoff for Kids Gala, and I spoke to Trey Lance and Juwan Jennings and Alex Barrett, and they all said what's been most fun about OTA so far is the chirping back and forth between the wide receivers and the defensive backs. And those are the guys, I know we were going to talk about who's impressed us at OTAs so far, and it's that group. It is Darrell Luter, it is Isaiah Oliver, it is Ronnie Bell and Brandon Ayuk. That group, it's kind of really their chance to get their feet on the ground, get some reps from the quarterbacks, and they've been fun to watch.
I would say we've only watched two practices, one each week.
Oh, I forgot one.
Who's that?
D'Amador Lenore.
Yes, I was going to say D'Amador. I'll talk about him later.
Yes.
But I would say the best player on the field, or at least the guy who had the best practice, the guy who really stood out to me was Brandon Ayuk. Yes. And I guess he should.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's like the veteran guy who's been out there the most during these OTA practices.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I thought that we saw them practice on Wednesday.
Right.
And he just, I mean, he stood out. And he was making plays down the field. I think he was catching passes from each of the three quarterbacks deep down the field, running into the end zone, high-stepping, throwing the ball up in the air, all of that. But I would agree with you. I think the defense is usually ahead of the offense during training camp when the pads go on. But when you're talking like the 7-on-7 drills, when there's no pass rush, typically the offense has its way. But I would echo what you just said. I think that Isaiah Oliver and Diamador Lenore are 1 and 1A or whatever, 1A and 1B, as far as the players on defense who have impressed the most. Because I don't think we've seen Charvarius Mooney-Ward out there.
No, he was dealing with some tightness, so he's been working with the trainers on the side field. We've seen him running. Juwan Jennings, Dre Greenlaw has been over there. Deebo Samuel was also with the trainers, kind of working on the side field, just conditioning, but not doing anything with the team on the field yet.
Yeah, you know, anytime my daughters ask me for money, I deal with some tightness too. I'm a tight one. I don't want to give up that money. But I think you're talking about like a physical.
Yes.
With Diamador Lenore? Okay.
With Diamador Lenore.
With Charvarius Ward. Yes.
Don't start any bad rumors here.
No. But yeah, Charvarius Ward. No, Diamador Lenore has been lights out.
Yes.
Isaiah Oliver has been very good. And then of the young guys you mentioned, Darrell Luter, who's looked pretty good. And then also, we'd be remiss not to mention J.R. Brown, who
has gotten
some interceptions during these OTAs. And is definitely putting himself in position and is a guy that just, he has a certain, well, his name is Jair. He does have a certain air about him, doesn't he? I don't know. I mean, there's something there with him that you don't often see with rookies.
And right, it's a maturity.
There's maturity. There's kind of a sense of, I don't know, like even already kind of ownership of just looking and acting the part.
And confidence. I know I talked to Daniel Bullocks, who coaches up the DBs, and I asked him what's happening with Diamador Lenore. What's been the big takeaway from his progress from his first year till now? And he said, really, it's confidence. So you look at Jair Brown, I think it's all relative. The fact that he's confident when he's on the field, then, you know, you're confident enough to go make the plays. You take the chance, but you also have confidence in your decisions. That affects him on the field, and it's, you can see it.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, we're talking about all these guys. We're talking about Lenore. We're talking about Luter. We're talking about Jair Brown. Talking about Isaiah Oliver. You know, those guys are not household names. You know, those guys aren't people that, you know, when you talk about the 49ers defense, you're going to be immediately talking about. But you know, let's talk about Lenore for a second. The way he ended last season, and he was playing so well, and it got to the playoffs and teams didn't even challenge him. I mean, he was very stingy, kind of like me giving money to my daughters. He was very stingy when it came to what?
Is there a dad joke limit on a podcast?
Yeah, if there is, then we're off the air already. Let's see here. Dak Prescott didn't challenge him. Before that, Geno Smith didn't challenge him. And really, Jalen Hurts didn't challenge him either. Of course, once the Eagles got that lead, they stopped throwing the football and doing much of anything. But Lenore, I think we all always talk about how when a guy ends his first season strong, sometimes he takes a step back and it works the other way, where sometimes if a guy struggles that first season, kind of opens his eyes to how he has to work to put himself in position. And it certainly looks as if Diamador Lenore used his success in year two as a springboard to work even harder and make the improvements that the 49ers defense would like for him to make. And I mean, again, it's the off-season program, but still, I mean, he's looked really, really good just from a coverage standpoint in these early practices.
And he's made big plays. Now, it's supposed to be non-contact. They are making a little contact. I would say D'Amato Lenore has made the most contact during the two practices we've seen. His pass breakup on the far side of the field, I remember that was the one that kind of fired up the defense. And, you know, you can always hear Fred Warner.
Are you talking about the one where he almost ripped Ronnie Bell's head off?
Yeah. Probably not the best type of physical contact during OTAs, but he's made some big plays and he gets the defense fired up. And like I said, Fred Warner was yelling for him. You know, he's kind of the most vocal leader on the defense during practices. And that, I mean, got the entire defense jumping up and down on the side of the field.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, you don't really tell much from these offseason workouts. And I think most of it is just, it's the mental work. It's you don't want to do anything during the offseason that would have any carryover effect in a negative way to the start of training camp. And usually that would pertain to someone getting injured. But you also want to do enough work where once training camp starts, man, that train starts rolling pretty quickly.
And yeah, this and then year, it's dual, it, then it's joint practices, and then it's preseason. It happens really quick now without those extended training camps with two-a-day practices. So, yeah, it seems like it happens so fast. Once it starts, man, the season is on.
And this year, I think I don't think I can ever remember the 49ers holding joint practices with or against a team before the first game.
You know, it's usually between before the second game.
Yeah, second or even the third. But this is a very unique situation because usually you get to those dog days where it's like, man, the team's so ready to go play against another team because they've been practicing against each other. But this year, you know, I think they open the preseason on Sunday, August 13th. And so I just back it up. So then the day before that will be a player's day off. No practice, maybe a walkthrough or something. And then the 12th, then the 10th and the 11th, they'll be practicing against the Raiders. And I would anticipate those practices will be happening at nighttime.
Their PR director said it'd be happening early in the morning.
Early in the morning. Okay, great.
Before it gets hot, because it is going to be hot in Las Vegas that time of the year.
And that's definitely the city where I want to be waking up at 6 a.m. to go watch a practice, because I'm sure I'm going to be, you know, in bed at 8 p.m. in Vegas the night before those practices. So. Absolutely great. Thanks
a
lot.
We'll have the afternoon to nap, so recover.
Okay. I'm a world-class napper, if you didn't know that about me already.
I did know that about you.
On this 49ers Talk podcast, I know you mentioned it. You went to see Eric Armstead get the key to the city of Sacramento.
Yes. That's cool. Yes.
Also, I sat down with Leonard Hankerson, the 49ers wide receivers coach, and we talk about some stuff that pertains obviously to his wide receivers, but also I think maybe a little bit of insight into why Brock Purdy is so attractive. Not attractive, that's probably not the right word. Well, he's an attractive young man, but he's also somebody that his teammates really like, from the standpoint of they know if they do the right things that Brock Purdy will reward them. And before I talk myself into more of a hole and then I have to dig myself out, let's just hear this word from our sponsor.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that the warranty from a tire manufacturer could be voided if your car is out of alignment? At Big O Tires, we install and maintain every tire we sell and offer critical services like alignments. Here at Big O, everything we do is to protect you and your car. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
All right, we're back on 49ers Talk. And as we talked about, Jennifer, you made the drive to Sacramento.
Ooh, that was a long drive.
Not necessarily long in distance, but long in time spent in the car, probably.
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, it should have been a 2-hour drive. It's 120 miles, mostly freeway, and it took me a 3 full hours. So we spoke to the assistant coaches on Thursday. We had a half an hour with the offensive coaches, half hour with the defensive coaches. And then right when it ended, I jumped in the car and it took me 3 hours to get to Sacramento.
Is that why you didn't even say hi to me or bye to me on Thursday?
Yeah. I texted you though. I was like, yeah, sorry, I couldn't talk. I had to get on the road.
Yeah, I could tell you were doing the voice dictation because when you said you're going to the Eric Armstead event, Siri or whatever voice dictation spelled his name E-R-I-C. So I knew that Jennifer knows how to spell Eric Armstead's name correctly, yes. But obviously Siri doesn't. So no. That led me to believe that you were being safe and you're hands-free with your texting and driving.
I was.
Well, hands-free with your texting, hopefully not hands-free with your driving.
Yeah, that is correct. It was a really nice event. Zenni was the presenting sponsor. You know, Zenni is the eyeglass company that also worked with George Kittle. I think it's a great partnership because Zenni actually also provides eye exams and glasses for kids that Eric Armstead works with. So Eric Armstead's foundation, Eric Armstead, the Armstead Academic Project works with the underserved youth of the Sacramento area, which is his hometown. He's from Elk Grove. And all the money that's raised goes to programs and equipment and all the different things that kids need in those underserved neighborhoods so that they have an equal opportunity at education. And I've covered Eric Armstead since he started his foundation, and to see how it's grown from then is just such a really cool thing to see. The last gala they had was in 2019, and they do a silent auction and a live auction as well. Last time they raised $100,000 and it all goes right to the program. This year they're gauging that it's probably $250,000.
Wow, that's great. And, really cool. He's been the 49ers nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for multiple years.
Yeah, three consecutive years in a row. I got to talk to Trey Lance.
And I was going to say, he's probably the front runner for a fourth year in a row.
I think so too. Trey Lance, Alex Barrett, Juwan Jennings were there. Patrick Willis was there. Dr. York was there. And they all spoke about how Eric is so consistent in all the work that he does. And, you know, it's not just a little push here for his foundation. It is consistent work throughout the year. He's part of the 49ers Foundation for all the 49ers community events that they do. He's always there. He also is on the board for Inspire Change, which is the NFL organization. So the club puts up $500,000 a year. And I think a lot of the teams do that as well. And Eric is on the board to help decide where that money goes. So he's so involved. And I think it's, you know, when you look at how much time they have to put in throughout the season, throughout the year as a football player, the fact that he makes time, and he's also married and has two daughters. So he's a full-time dad as well. So the fact that he makes time to do all this stuff is really impressive. And it was
that is impressive. And, you know, while you're talking about that, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, so many guys come to the 49ers and they make a big impact. And, you know, Sacramento, without question, is 49ers country.
Right.
And I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head here, but you know, I just can't think of too many guys who are from, you know, the Bay Area, you know, quote unquote 49ers country, who have had such a long relationship with the 49ers and, you know, Sacramento's in the Bay Area. You know, I'm thinking, well, John Brody, I know, is from Palo Alto. He's one guy that comes to mind, but, you know, a guy like Eric Armstead, who, you know,
he's really homegrown in the Bay Area.
Yeah. It's funny because there was a time where I thought, you know, after they drafted DeForest Buckner, I wondered how much longer Eric Armstead was going to be with the team. So he had some injury issues early in his career.
Right.
But, you know, he's done all the work on the field, done all the work off the field, and, you know, longest tenured 49er right now, and just really has established himself through the years as, you know, part of that community, the 49ers community, part of the greater San Francisco area as a whole. And it wasn't like he just did it, you know, fourth year in the league, boom, I'm going to do this. It was a steady buildup and just, you know, kept growing it every year, every year, every year to the point it is now. So kudos to Eric Armstead for a job well done.
Yes. A fun story that kind of shows how much he's appreciated in the Elk Grove and Sacramento areas. So at the end of the event, they gave us a little goodie bag to take home, and mine had a bottle of wine in it. Well, I was flying back home, so I couldn't take it with me. So I was thinking,
you could have taken it with you if you had chugged it before you reached airport security.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be wise. Then they might not let me on the airplane. So I was thinking, like, who can I give this bottle of wine to? So I thought, oh, maybe when I get to the airport, I'll find an airport employee that might be a 49ers fan. But I dropped off my rental car, got on the rental car shuttle, sat in the front of the bus, and it's kind of an older gentleman. And we were waiting for everybody to get on the bus. And I was like, so do you happen to be a 49ers fan? He's like, I'm a huge 49ers fan. And he immediately said, my favorite player is Eric Armstead. I'm like, today's your lucky day. I have a bottle of wine that he has autographed, and I'm going to give this to you because I can't take it on the airplane. And he looked at me like, and you could tell how much it meant to him. He's like, and you know what? Today is my last day working here at this job. I am retiring. I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm like, well, happy retirement. And so he got a bottle of wine with Eric Armstead's signature on it, and he's riding off into the sunset.
Oh my gosh. How about that? Great.
Pay it forward. Yeah.
I'm glad that bottle of wine did not die on the vine, that you were able to find a nice home for it. So good work, Eric Armstead. Good work, Jennifer Lee Chan.
Thanks.
Okay. So we talked about Thursday. We had an opportunity to talk to all the position coaches on both sides of the ball at the 49ers. And you and I both had opportunities to talk to certain people. I know when I walked in, you were engrossed in conversation with Chris Kocurek.
Yes.
Let's see, on the defensive side, who else did I talk to over there? Oh, I talked to Johnny Holland, linebackers coach. Mm-hmm. And then who else did you talk to on either defense or offense?
I talked to Daniel Bullocks, who is the defensive back safeties coach. I talked to him. That was pretty much who I talked to on defense. Chris Kocurek spoke for a long time, and he had so many interesting things to say. I think the bulk of the media was kind of surrounding him. Yeah. He had a lot to say about Drake Jackson and how he expects him to have a much higher level of production this year, and how confident he is and the fact that he did the work during the offseason. And we've spoken about on the podcast how much bigger Drake Jackson appears to be, a lot of muscle mass put back on. And not only that, but he's doing the work. And I think one of the best stories Chris Kocurek said was that, you know, he was telling Drake at his kind of exit interview at the end of the 2022 season that, you know, this is the date you have to be back. I'd love to see you here earlier. And I also would love to get into work, because I think Chris Kocurek works out in the facility as well. I'd love to get there or not be driving into the facility and wondering, is Drake Jackson going to be there? And now he says he's at the point where every day he drives into the facility, he knows he's going to be there. And he is one of the earliest guys to arrive at the facility now and is just doing the work. And so he has high expectations for him this season. So we'll see how that plays out on the field. But it looks like he's really dedicated the offseason to being better and having a really good second year.
Awesome. Okay, so I talked to Leonard Hankerson, the wide receivers coach, and he was, you know, he was a wide receivers coach in college at Stephen F. Austin, came to the 49ers as quality control. And then when Wes Welker left and went to the Miami Dolphins, Hankerson, who played for Kyle Shanahan in Washington. So he's seen it from both sides. He played for Shanahan as a young guy coming up, and he played 4 or 5 years in the NFL. And then Kyle obviously thought enough of his work ethic and everything he did as a player to also endorse him as a coach. And now he's in his second year as the 49ers wide receivers coach. And so I sat down with Leonard Hankerson. So what's it like to go through the grinder as a player for Kyle Shanahan and maybe go through the grinder as an assistant coach?
Of course. No, it's been awesome. You know, just to be able to, you know, see it on from both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, as a player, playing for him 4 years, you know, and then getting it from a player's perspective, and then on the opposite side, coach's perspective, you know, just to be able to see it both ways and be able to relay it to my players, it has been awesome for me, you know, because it's the same as that coaching points. You know, when I was a player playing receiver form, it's the same as that coaching points that we use today. You know, so the mindset had always been the same, you know, when it comes to being the best. When you're out there playing fast, doing it at a high level, you know, and competing, you know, and I tell my guys all the time, I say, listen, it's not that, you know, you feel that we're attacking you in some way. It's not, because when I got drafted in 2011, it was the same as that way then, you know, so it's all about how can we, you know, progress and take what we're coaching and take it to another level.
I'm just thinking, you know, hearing you talk, I'm thinking back to 2021 when things were not easy for Brandon Ayuk, the beginning of that season. You know, what was your role during that time? I'm sure you had to express some of your personal experiences.
Of course.
So what was that like, and what helped Brandon get through that time to become, you know, come out the other end a much better player?
Yeah, of course. You know, with younger players, you always, you know, have to pretty much go over and beyond with those guys because you're really trying to mold them into a certain player. You're trying to get them to visualize something they haven't been really visualizing, or you're trying to get them to play a certain way that they haven't been playing, you know. So as a younger player coming, you know, into the league, you know, after already being playing at a high level, you think, man, I've been doing it at a high level, so why are you guys attacking me, or why are you guys getting on me so much, you know, when I was already playing at a high level? But it's not that way, right? Everybody have a culture, everybody has a standard, and it's really how can we all get on the same page, you know. And with Ayuk, one thing about him, he's very coachable, you know, and he's listening, he understands fully, and he have been taking, you know, what we've been coaching him and taking into the field, taking it from the meeting rooms and putting into the field. And the one thing about it is the constant growth that he's been showing, you know, has been outstanding, and he's continued to take those strides and becoming, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver year in and year out. And he's not fully there yet, and we all expect him. I'm expecting him. He's expecting himself, you know, to continue to grow, to continue to be the caliber player that he is, you know, and with the work, his work ethic, you know, he's going to get there. Got to keep pushing, working together.
When you were playing, did they have those GPS on you to track how fast you're running, you know, practice and stuff?
We did. I know. I don't know if that started back in 2014 or 2015, you know, but we did. You know, it wasn't as big as it is today, you know, but I stressed it out, you know, to my guys, because of receivers, that's what we built on, is speed. You know, how can we get that defender to defend something that he's not trying to defend? That's defend deep. You know, and we only going to do that if we use our speed. You know, we use every ounce of speed.
Regardless
that we got,
of where you are in the
regardless
progression.
Regardless of where you're at in the progression. Yeah. You know, so I love that we have those GPSs, because I get to look at it and say, man, you wasn't running on this play, or you wasn't, you know, you didn't hit 20 miles per hour, or today you didn't hit 22 miles per hour, you know, so why? You know, and we play receiver, so we need to be fast, you know, so I love the GPSs.
How difficult is it? Because it seems to me like kind of what I'd heard was that, you know, Brandon thought he was practicing hard, but the numbers didn't necessarily show.
Yeah.
So was there a turning point for him where the light really, you know, the switch flipped, and he understood exactly what the point was being made to him?
You know what? I think as a receiver, just going based off my experience in playing receiver, especially going from college to the pro, you know, yes, when you're out there playing receiver and you haven't really been coached to run as hard as you can, as fast as you can, and screen, when you just have natural speed, natural talent, that's what you're going to use. But there's another level into doing so, you know. So when I ran a 4.43 at the combine, I was shocked. I was surprised myself, because, you know, I didn't really know I had that in me. But I tell my guys today, you know, screen as if you're trying to run that best 40, because I know you're going to run your fastest then, and that's how it should feel when we're running routes. You know, so when those guys start to see, you know, that picture and start to compare themselves, all right, when there's a clip on film with them doing so versus a clip when it's on film of them not doing so, then they can see the difference. So it's just constantly showing them, all right, how to do it, you know, and why we need to do it, and showing them doing it. And then once they see the difference, then they can continue to do it. You know, so with him, you know, that's all it came down to, you know, consistently showing him, you know, the ways that he can be the best when he out there on the field. Because he got the talent, and, you know, he got the ability. You know, now how can we continue to take that next step, you know, every year? And that's what it comes down to.
I know Kyle Shanahan certainly doesn't like that whole, you know, number one receiver, number mm-hmm. two receiver. But, you know, from the outside, it looks like right now, you know, we saw it in 2021, we saw it last year, where you guys have two legitimate number one receivers in uh-huh. Deebo Samuel
yeah.
and Brandon Ayuk, in different styles for sure. But I mean, those are two guys who on any given Sunday or Monday or Thursday or whatever
yeah.
could
yeah.
can really help you win a game and maybe even in some cases take over a game.
And of course, you know, we have all around, you know, in that entire room, we got a heck of a receiver core, you know, and it's all about those guys showing up and pushing one another to be the best. And that goes from, I always say, it goes from number one to number 100. And it doesn't matter. Every single day you got an opportunity. Every single day you walk out there between those white lines or you put on that jersey, you got an opportunity to go out there and be the best. You know, so we always have friendly competitions. We always go out there and compete. And we go out there with the mindset to be a playmaker, to be the best on the field. And it comes, what it comes down to is, right, can I line up in front of you and kick your tail, or are you going to line up in front of me and kick my tail? You know, so that's our mindset when we go out there. And it doesn't matter who it is. You know, it can be Ronnie Bell. You know, when we drafted Ronnie, we know the ability that he has. Right, and every day I expect running to come in and compete and push, you know, the older guys, you know, and vice versa, them do the same, you know. So that's just like my mentality that I had as a receiver. I was never the first option, you know. That's what I always tell my guys, never the first option. But there's a reason why I am in this room coaching you guys today, right? Because of the mentality that I had when I was out there, and that was, it doesn't matter what progression I was. You go out there and you run a route the same as that way, every single rep, you full speed, 150 miles per hour, that's what's going to show up on tape. You getting open is going to show up on tape. Then guess what? The quarterbacks are going to want to throw you the ball more and more and more. So number one, number two, number 20, it doesn't really matter. You go out there and you play the game the same way every single time. The ball is going to find you. Cornerback's going to start talking about you. Oh, this guy's working. Other teams going to start trying to defend you. And guess what? Most importantly, your coaches is going to see it, and they're going to want to get you the ball more as well. So
yeah, and your quarterback's going to say they want to throw.
Correct. You know, so I'm happy that we got the talent all around in the room. You know, and yes, of course, Deebo and IU, they're two heck of a players. You know, and we just try to go out and compete, you know, at a high level every week.
Two guys I want to talk to you about, ask you about. Two young guys. We'll start with the draft pick last year, Danny Gray.
Yep.
Like, you know, as most young guys do, you know, it didn't appear smooth. You know, he didn't make a huge impact. But what's he capable of, and what does he need to do this offseason going into training camp to put himself in that spot where he can be, you know, probably the player that he wants to be, the
Correct.
Contributor, the producer that he wants to be.
Correct. And it's never easy, you know, for younger guys when making that transition, you know, to the next level. Look at Ayuk, right? Mm-hmm. Ayuk got drafted first round. Danny got drafted third round, you know, and it's always going to be, you know, a curveball, because at the end of the day, you're still trying to mold those guys to do something that you visualize, do something that you already believe in and what we expect them to do. You know, so for Danny himself, Danny has all of the ability in the rear. Danny is a heck of a football player, you know, probably the fastest receiver that we do have, you know, and he has that tough mindset, that grit mindset that we love. You know, the main thing with him, he just got to continue to grow, you know, and which he has made tremendous strides so far within a year, and he has taken that step. You know, one thing you can't take away from him is his work ethic. You know, he works hard. He competes every single day. Now it's about how consistent can he be? Can he be every single day? Can you have that mindset to go out there and no matter if it is Monday or no matter if it's Sunday, right? We're going to do it the same exact way every single time in between the white lines, you know? So that's what, you know, younger guys, that's what they have to realize and not think that because I did it one day, that's enough. Mm-hmm. Got to do it every day,
yeah.
You know? So that, which is, the thing that most young guys, you know, have to make sure they know and have in their mindset and right. make their mindset be.
And then Ronnie Bell's draft
yep.
this year. He seems maybe a little bit more polished than maybe a lot of rookies who come in. I don't know if that's – I don't want to put words in your mm-hmm. mouth, but how would you describe just kind of what you've seen from him and what's the step that he has to take to
correct.
put himself in position?
Yeah, correct. Ronnie has been – he's been doing an outstanding job. You know, I think he is ahead of most rookies when they come in, especially in this offense, because this offense is not – that easy to pick up, and he's been doing a heck of a job by playing all three positions, not only one. He's been doing a great job, you know, and what we've seen on film with Ronnie, all right, it's that same mindset we've seen with Danny, that toughness mindset, the ability, he can catch it, he can catch and run ready, he's a punt return as well, you know, and that's what stands out to us. You know, of course, right, any young guy, like I just said, any young guy that comes in, you're going to try to mold them into doing, you know, certain things your way, and because, you know, them being not necessarily having the exact skills, you know, them just polishing those skills to where, you know, they can do it. He's been doing a heck of a job. You know, I'm happy where he's at. I'm happy with what he's been putting on tape thus far. And same thing I tell him every day. You got to do it every day. You can't take a step back. You know, you got to be consistent doing it. And you got to have that intent when you out there, you know, to be deliberate with each rep. Because we're not going to go out there every day and have 30 or 40 catches at practice, right? So we got to make sure when we out there, we're getting the most out of it, you know. So he's on the right track. Just got to make sure, right, we stay there, you know. So it's been good.
Okay, so, you know, you heard Ankerson talking about how much he likes the 49ers wide receiver room. I think maybe we can put to rest any DeAndre Hopkins talk. Oh, I don't think there was ever any DeAndre Hopkins talk, to be honest with you, but
not in Santa Clara anyways.
No, yeah, definitely not. But, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, you know, it's going to be tough to keep these two guys just because, I mean, think about it this year, you know, no issues whatsoever, but next year, Deebo Samuel's cap figure goes from $8 million to $28 million. And that same year, Brandon Ayuk's cap figure goes from $4 million to $14 million. But I guess that's something they can that Parag Marathe and others can discuss at a later time. The one thing that Hankerson talked about that I found interesting was with Brandon Ayuk. You know, the how Brandon Ayuk now, you know, he's like saying, this year I'm going to take off. And I thought to myself, boy, it sure seemed like an 1,000-yard season was taking off, but not in his mind. But it's the way you practice. And Hankerson talked about, you know, running hard every snap, regardless of where you are in the progression. And the first thing I thought of was, now I think, you know, what Brock Purdy showed in his 8 games as a 49er starting quarterback, or at least he didn't start all those games, but, you know, as the main quarterback in those games, was that if you're open, regardless of where you are in the progression, there's a decent chance the ball's coming your way. And I'm not sure that that's been the case with the 49ers for a long, long time. And so I think that is kind of motivation, you know, seeing George Kittle, who wasn't in the progression, or Christian McCaffrey, who wasn't in the progression. I think seeing those guys get the ball because they were open, and Brock Purdy, if you're open, he'll find you. That's got to be tremendous motivation for all receivers to kind of bust their butt
to get open. Yeah. I think it makes, I've always heard, you always hear Kyle Shanahan said, hey, you guys have got to get separation. And I think you hear that, and then when you finally see it happen on the field, and the fact that Brock Purdy finds the guy with separation, then it all becomes a clearer picture. And for receivers to be more motivated because they're going to get the ball. I mean, I've thought about this a lot. How are they going to spread the ball out? Are there going to be enough footballs for everybody, all those star players on the offense? So they're competing with each other to get more separation to make it easier for Brock Purdy to get on the ball. So yes, there's competition within the position groups, but there's also competition with everybody, all those key players, the skill players on the offense, to get that separation. So they're the ones who get the ball.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you know, George Kittle, hey, I was open by 2 yards over the linebacker covering me. And Deebo Samuel's like, well, I was open by 4 yards over the cornerback covering me. So I'm the one who got the ball. You know, yeah, you're right. It is interesting that I've never heard it like put that way, but that's absolutely the truth. And something going back to Brandon Ayuk, you know, one of the things I heard on him, I talked to Leonard about that, you know, the GPS, is that even though Brandon Ayuk thought he was running hard, at the end of the day, they'd look at the GPS and go, hold it now, your fastest times running were when you had the ball. So you weren't running all out when you didn't have the ball. And it takes a while. You know, you can't just overnight say, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to start running hard. Because it's a process. And I just remember going back to that time where, you know, Kyle Shanahan kept saying he's practicing better and the results did not show in the games. He's practicing better. The results did not show. And then at some point, 2, 3, 4 weeks down the line, the results started showing. And I think that's all Brandon Ayuk needed to say, oh, wow. You know, I am capable of so much more.
Yeah, numbers don't lie. So it's really interesting. I thought it was also interesting what Leonard Hankerson said about how much more important they are now than, you know, the eye test before. Now they really have the proof of, okay, you're running this many miles per hour on this route. You're running this many miles per hour on this next play. So they can really compare it, because I'm sure that, you know, they would watch that on film previously before they had those GPS trackers, and you can kind of do the eye test, but I mean, the proof is right on the paper for that. And you can see how much it has made a difference with Brandon Ayuk's ability on the field, how he's been open. It'll be interesting to see how much he's going to be able to accomplish stat wise this year after, you know, a great rookie year, kind of that drop off in year two. And then again, a great year three. Yeah. What's up for him in year four?
All right. And we will see how the whole team is rounding into shape and how they're looking. Final week of the 49ers offseason program is upon us. And Jennifer and I will be there, and we will bring all of our all of our observations. And I don't know if we have very many insights, but we might bring a few insight or two along with us as the 49ers offseason rolls on, and we will have it all on 49ers Talk.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.